Welcome to Murder Most Foul, a podcast devoted to exploring famous murder cases of our time. Some solved, some unsolved, but all fascinating and guaranteed to raise the hairs on the back of your neck. I'm your host, Jim Solanowski. Today's episode... Kidnapping, Murder, and Innocence Lost. With 50-year-old cold murder cases, there is rarely the opportunity to bring the perpetrator, even if identified, to justice. Odds are that he or she is long deceased. But not so in the case of 8-year-old Gretchen Harrington of Marple, PA, a quiet suburb of Philadelphia. In 1975, she was abducted on her way to Bible camp, brutally murdered, and her naked body dumped in Ridley State Park. In 2022, authors Joanna Falcone Sullivan and Mike Mathis, who grew up in Marple and were childhood contemporaries of Gretchen, decided to write a book about the crime, its effect on the family of Gretchen, and, for that matter, the entire town. They interviewed both state and town authorities and were given access to investigation files. They sat down with Gretchen's family and friends, and unwittingly, the murderer and his family as well. Many folks credit the authors with revitalizing the investigation after 5 decades, and in no small part helping identify the murderer and bring him to justice. Joanna Falcone Sullivan, one of the authors of Marple's Gretchen Harrington Tragedy, Kidnapping, Murder, and Innocence Lost in Suburban Philadelphia, joins us today on Murder Most Foul. Welcome, Joanna.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jim.
So, Joanna, the tragic story of Marple Township's Gretchen Harrington spanned almost 5 decades, and you and Mike were there in the beginning, and you're now here with your book at the end. So let's go back to the beginning, 1975, and tell us about Marple Township and what it was like for you back then.
So my family moved to Marple Township in December of 1974. So we were pretty new to the community in August of 75 when this murder occurred. And it had a profound effect on me, on a lot of other kids, on the community. And Mike Mathis, my co-author, and I decided to write about it, but we wanted to write more than a book about a crime. We wanted to write about how the community still felt this impact almost 50 years later. So the book centers on Gretchen's family, but also on people who were friends with her or didn't even know her because she seemed to touch so many lives. Marple Township is only 13 miles from the Philadelphia border, from West Philadelphia, but it couldn't be farther. Especially at that time, you know, the community was definitely a place where people from the city moved, you know, new houses were built in the 60s and the 70s, and the community was filled with, you know, exiles from Philadelphia, including my family. And it was quiet, and it still is a pretty quiet place. There's a lot more traffic nowadays, but back then, you know, people, you know, shopped at the local supermarkets, and there were a lot of, you know, local stores, and there was a farmer's market. There were still some farms at the time, you know, not far from where this crime happened. It's a lot more developed now. But at the time, you know, it was kind of a place where the Little League was big and parades. There's still a parade every 4th of July and Memorial Day. And, you know, the local high school, my high school, Marple Newtown, you know, marched in the parade, our band marched in the parade, and people rode their bikes in the parade, and the fire station had their trucks, and very much all-American suburb.
And I'm going to guess if it was anything like the small town that I grew up in the early 60s, nobody locked their front door.
And one of the things I think that a word that pops up several times in the book, I think that is important for those of us living in a faster time now, of course, or bigger cities, there was a feeling of safety.
Definitely a feeling of safety. You know, people used to say to me all the time, you know, my family was used to going into the city. We lived in the city. We still had friends in the city. And I remember my friends, some of them had never even been to the city. And as I got older, I used to take them in. We used to take the bus and the subway into the city. But there were a lot of people who were scared and they felt very safe in Marple. So that's why this crime had such an effect, because you realize that place is not a guarantee of safety.
Now, that's pre-August 15th, 1975. So why don't you tell my audience what happened on August 15th of 1975?
On August 15th, 1975, Gretchen Harrington, she was a little 8-year-old girl who lived in Marple Township with her family. Her father was the Reverend Harold Harrington, and he was the pastor of the Broomall Christian Reformed Church, Presbyterian denomination. And she lived there in the parsonage. And this one Friday morning, she was heading to Bible school at the other Reformed Church up the road, about a half a mile. She was walking on what is still a pretty busy road, Lawrence Road. It has a wide shoulder, so she was on the shoulder, not a sidewalk, and she was walking up to the light where she would then cross to the church. She never made it to the church that morning. A couple witnesses saw her on the side of the road talking to someone in a truck, and some other people saw a truck and a car, and we talk about that in the book, about how the different sightings. But people were heading to work because it was after 8 a.m., so it was a work day, even though it was summer. And so there were several witnesses who, you know, saw this little girl. Well, she never made it. And then that's where things got, you know, a little crazy. They realized she wasn't there. Police were called. A massive search was launched in Marple Township, in the woods around there, in around the streets, around the creek, and she was not found until 2 months later in Ridley Creek State Park.
And to keep the timeline straight for my listeners, both you and your co-author, Mike Mathis, have memories of, since you were in the middle of it, have memories of that day.
So that memory is like seared in my brain. I was at the Lawrence Park Swim Club, which is a swim club right in that neighborhood, with my family. We pretty much went every day of the summer. And that day we were in the lower part of the pool where they had the tennis courts and the basketball hoops. And we were, you know, kids just playing, and the helicopter started circling in the woods that were adjacent to the swim club. And we were wondering what happened, you know, the whole day, and people were talking about that. Then we heard later on in the day, you know, what was happening. But that memory stuck with me. And it has also stuck with so many people we talk to for the book who talk about this case. That's the memory that is really triggered for them. Now, Mike Mathis, my co-author, his father took part in the search the next day looking for Gretchen. So they launched several searches with local police and fire people, along with civilians who just combed the area for her. They handed out flyers on Lawrence Road where she went missing, hoping that someone would know something about where she was and hoping that she was still alive.
And in a tragic, ironic twist, that day, Mrs. Harrington brought home a new baby after just giving birth to the parsonage.
That day was a very, you know, busy one in the Harrington household. So they were not in their regular routine. Usually Gretchen had two older sisters, Zoe and Harriet, who now goes by Ann, who used to walk her up to Bible school. And her father used to look at them, you know, go up the hill. That day, the baby had come home, their youngest sister, Jessica. And they were, you know, preoccupied in the household and very busy. So he did not do his normal routine. The sisters, for some reason, did not walk her up. So she went by herself. And, you know, obviously, someone saw an opportunity there.
Which family member said almost from the beginning, she's gone?
Her father said that she's gone. I know she's gone. He felt it right away. The sister, you know, knew, you know, she says she knew, you know, her recollection of that day is, you know, obviously it's a child's memory, but she remembers all the grown-ups talking in hushed tones, her father on the phone, just a lot of chaos. And, you know, she, you know, looks back on that day and, you know, has some very clear memories, but, you know, some are fuzzy. She's not sure what was memory or what was, you know, just...
And very soon, obviously, an investigation begins by the authorities. So tell us about that.
The investigation was a kidnapping investigation by the Marple police until October 14th, 75, when a jogger discovered the body. And that's when the Pennsylvania State Police came in because it was their jurisdiction in the state park. And from that time on, it was a murder investigation. Her parents were notified early that day when they were pretty sure the clothing was Gretchen's. It was found in a neat little pile. And so they notified her and notified the parents, and they came and were, you know, told, you know, privately that it confirmed it. But it was a very tough day because there was a lot of, you know, there was still hope, even though, you know, 2 months, it was a very long 2 months, but there's always that hope that she would be found alive.
Do the authorities know whether she was violated or just murdered?
Most people believe she was. The body was badly decomposed. And I think we did put in the book that, I'm trying to remember, that they suspected, you know, that the whole reason why most child predators take kids for, you know.
So with many of these tragic cases over time, the trail becomes cold. Again, especially in 1975, there wasn't DNA databases, even if there was any left behind. But tell us a little bit about, you know, the investigation over the years going forward, coming up to the time, of course, currently when you and Mike write your book.
So I know that the Marple Police Department never gave up over the decades. And we saw that in the evidence box, different detectives over different periods of time picked the case back up and looked through all the evidence and tried to re-examine it. They had a prime suspect who we name in the book, who had committed acts of violence against two little girls in nearby communities, one in Philadelphia, one in Delaware County, where Marple Township is. And he was doing time in jail for those crimes. And they looked at him over and over again. They interviewed him, and they had wanted to interview him one last time in jail, but they did not get permission. During one interview, he told a police officer, asked him, you know, did you do this? And he said, it sounds like me. And the police officer told us that sounded like a confession to me, but he died and he was never charged with anything. There were many other suspects. Like, they really combed, you know, we went through that box and they combed through all the sex offenders in the area. They looked at similar crimes in other states. You mentioned the Atlanta child murders, but they looked at Henry Lee Lucas, who was a serial killer who had lived in the area. Ted Bundy lived in the area. He went to Temple University in Philadelphia. He lived in Ocean City, New Jersey at a time. In fact, they're looking at him now in the murder of two unsolved murders in Ocean City, two women. So there were a lot of suspects that came up. That same year, Wendy Eaton went missing from Media, which is only a few miles away from Marple Township. And also, there were two girls in Maryland, in Wheaton, Maryland, the Lyons sisters, who were kidnapped and never found. That case has since been resolved, and somebody is in jail for their murders.
So fast forward to the present, why don't you tell my listeners a little bit about your journalistic background and how you and your colleague Mike Mathis came together to write this book, and sort of even how you wrote it together.
I've been the editor of the Baltimore Business Journal for more than 20 years. I have had a long journalism career working in newspapers covering education, some crime, politics, and business for the last 20-something years. Mike, a longtime journalist, he now works for the New Jersey court system. And we have kept in touch over the years. We met on the junior high newspaper, the Paxson Hollow Log. And we met there and stayed friends over the years, you know, lost touch, but Facebook kind of brought everyone back together. And we started, you know, I would see him at high school reunions, and I saw him at one of our high school reunions, and we talked about doing this book. And, you know, another 10 years went by and life got busy. And then the pandemic happened, and I messaged him one night, like, hey, do you want to finally do this book? And we decided to, and we started mapping out a plan to do it, and who we wanted to talk to and how it was going to happen. Mike has published several books with Arcadia Publishing. So we pitched the book to them first. They took it pretty quickly. And then we had, you know, from there, we had already started writing. We had about 6 months to to pull it together. We had done a lot of reporting already and had met with Gretchen's family and had been to the police station. We visited Marple Police Station about four times.
Now, you mentioned in passing, if the audience is going, what is that? There is this evidence box that you were given access to.
Yes, there was an evidence box that we have a picture of it in the book, that when we asked to see the Gretchen Harrington files, we got to the police station. There was this cardboard box with Gretchen Harrington's name on it. And we sat in the conference room, and the chief brought it in, and he let us go through it for hours and look at, you know, the different reports. And it was a different time. This was not computerized. So things were handwritten. We saw handwritten notes, handwritten press releases, you know, a lot of typewritten pages, lots of yellowed newspaper clippings. There was audio recordings of people who called in tips as well. Most of the tips were, you know, not real, but there was, everything dealing with the case was in that box. Pennsylvania State Police would not let us look at their boxes. And we hear they have many more boxes. We filed a Freedom of Information Act request to get those, and we were denied because it was an ongoing investigation. So we will try again.
I'm always intrigued by co-authors. So how did the two of you sort of divvy up the duties and sort of come together to have this wonderful, seamless finished product?
It took a lot of organization and planning. We had a standing call on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. And we would talk about, okay, what are we doing this week? And we had our, you're doing this, you're doing this, you're going to talk to this person, I'm going to talk to this person. I probably did, pulled in a lot of the notes and did a lot of the writing, but we were going back and forth on outlines. Mike is really organized, so he kept us on task with the outline, like here's chapter 7 is going to be called this, and we're going to focus on this. And so we, looked at it by chapters.
When was it finished? What year?
We finished it in April of 2022, and it was published in October.
So about a year ago.
Yeah.
At that point, it's a memoir, if you will. It's not a completed murder mystery because we don't know who did it. And so we're there. Now we're going to, again, talk about the fact that less than a month ago, the murder of Gretchen Harrington has been solved. And you and Mike, and I happen to agree, I've seen some interviews. So again, now we're going beyond the book. I've certainly seen an interview of you and Mike on a Fox station on YouTube. So you feel that maybe it was there or someone else I read in an article that you felt that this book coming out when it did sort of re-energize the case, do you think? Tell us about that.
We were told that directly by Marple Police Chief Brandon Grafe said, he felt like the book got people talking again. And, whether or not it directly led to, witness coming forward, we're not positive. Time will tell, but it became top of mind again for a lot of people.
Now,
including the police, I think the police, Pennsylvania State Police, started looking at the Marple file.
Good.
After the book came out.
And according to the authorities, the tip that led to the arrest and charging of the murderer of Gretchen Harrington was a woman now, of course, but she was a childhood friend of Gretchen's.
She reported to the police that she felt at the time that she suspected him. He came into the alleged killer came into her room when she was sleeping over at his house. She was friends with one of his daughters. Then he came into the room and he touched her and then left the room, and it happened again. And she wrote in her diary that she felt it was him that took Gretchen because of her experience.
Where was she still living in Marple, or was she in,
I am not positive where she, is living now, or but she was definitely a local person there in the community, who not in Marple. She was living in nearby in Havertown, apparently.
But she reported though to local church. To local yes. jurisdiction, either
yes,
state
or local.
Do we know if she read the book? Do we know if the book had any effect?
I don't know yet. Yeah, no, I'm still, we're still waiting to hear more details about that. And I think it's, it'll come out later. But I think, you know, right now they're trying to protect her. She's a key witness in the case.
So after 23 minutes of the podcast, I think it's time to reveal the name of the cad that committed this heinous crime. And I'll let one of the local news stations who covered it take it from here.
There are new answers this afternoon for this 8-year-old's family. For almost 50 years, no one knew who killed her in Pennsylvania. But now police say they have found her killer, and they say he's a former pastor who has been living in Marietta for years. 83-year-old David Zanstra is now charged with killing 8-year-old Gretchen Harrington in 1975.
This man is evil. He killed this poor 8-year-old girl he knew and who trusted him, and then he acted as if he was their family friend, not only during her burial and the period after that, but for years. And he then moved on as a reverend, both to Texas and I believe in Georgia.
And these details are hard to hear, but authorities say Zanstra admitted to offering the little girl a ride home from Bible camp, taking her to a secluded spot, performing sexual acts in front of her, and then beating her to death with his fists. But for decades, investigators say he denied ever seeing her the day she was kidnapped. They say what broke the case wide open was an interview with someone close to Zanstra's family earlier this year.
He was living in Marietta, Georgia with his family, with his wife, his longtime wife, Marge.
So this was the, oh my goodness, so we'll get into that. That was my question, is she still alive?
And she is still alive.
That. And so.
He has three daughters.
And one of the daughters is the one that is a friend of the person who came forward.
Yes.
And so, like you said, they did sleepovers. So this happened at his house when the young lady, was a guest of his daughter, who I believe is, so her name is Christy Zanstra, and she's married. So it's Brierton, correct?
Correct.
So that was the daughter who was having a sleepover. And this young lady, unnamed at this point, comes over and is molested, and it happens again, not that night, but happens another time. And according to news reports, she contemporaneously wrote in her diary, I believe, about the incidents, and even possibly later, that she, after Gretchen disappeared and her body was found, that she suspected Zanstra. What it's difficult to get my head around is that you interviewed him, Zanstra, for the book.
David Zanstra was one of the key people we talked to for the book. He was the pastor of the Bible school where Gretchen went, where she was heading that day. He was asked about whether or not he saw her that day, and he was adamant that he didn't. When we interviewed him, Mike Mathis, my co-author, interviewed David, and Mike's family knew David just like the Harringtons. They socialized with the Zanstras. Reverend Zanstra was at Mike's house for a couple different family gatherings. The Zanstras and the Harringtons were close family friends, and their kids played together and were growing up together. And the Reverend Zanstra that day, you know, we asked him about that day, and he said he was kind of vague about, the teacher asked me where Gretchen was, and I told her I didn't know. And she said, I thought she was with you. And then he said he either called police or someone else called police. So he was very unclear, and we thought maybe his memory at 82, when we interviewed him, was failing, or it was such a long time ago. But, you know, we see it in a different light now. His wife was, she was very helpful to us. She talked about that day. She talked about going over to the Harrington house and checking in on the family. She talked about her feelings that night, worried about Gretchen being out there, you know, alone and cold in the night. It was raining. So his wife was very open, and his daughter as well, Christy. So they ended up being like the better interviews for the book. We, you know, had no idea that, you know, he was involved. We did, you know, probably about 6 months ago, get a tip that he was possibly, this is after the book came out, that he was being looked at. And so, of course, we started like looking into our notes again to see, you know, what did we miss?
Anything jumping out or something like that? Sure.
And what jumps out to me is that, you know, the teacher saying to him, I thought she was with you. And the fact that there was that lagged time between when she showed up at school and when police were called after 11:30. So class was almost over when her father realized she never made it to class.
Was there anything in the box of evidence that you and Mike had access to when you were writing the book that indicates any kind of an interview that was done with Zanstra at the time?
There was nothing. There might be in the state police files,
sure,
but there was nothing that to indicate that he was ever a suspect,
right,
of the Marple police.
That I don't know if he's back yet. Has he been extradited? I believe it said in one article he's not going to fight extradition.
So he's not fighting it. So he should be coming back this week if he's not back already. Yeah.
But what about his poor wife and his child, who, again, when they interviewed with you, they clearly were talking about the case. They were talking about the time. They were talking about how it affected them then. And within weeks, or, you know, 6 months, 4 months, all of a sudden, they are the center of it. I mean, that, it just blows me away.
I think about that, and I think about how it must feel for the Harringtons that it's someone they knew and they trusted, and all these years have gone by. And you heard Gretchen's father passed away in 2021, so he doesn't get to see this resolution.
Is her mother still alive?
Her mother is still alive.
Good.
Eno Harrington.
And then the only other question, which again, I can find online somewhere, probably, when did he ultimately leave? So he didn't run out of town quickly.
No, he left in 1976.
So about a year. He was there about a year.
And, you know, his wife talked about how she didn't really like Philadelphia. They moved around several times.
And settled ultimately in Georgia.
Dallas and then California. They were in, and then Georgia, you know, there were several locations.
So needless to say, the crime person in me saying, obviously, they're looking at all these places now.
They are. They are looking at all these places. There's, they've reopened a case in California, in Fairfield, California. He lived about 5 minutes from where a little four-year-old disappeared in 1991. And he was living there from 90 to like 95, around that time. So they're looking at that. That case has never been solved.
And I also realize, which is, again, welcome to the 21st century, they obviously have entered or will be entering his DNA in all the national databases. So of any of these cases. And so if he left anything behind, a pubic hair or anything, even in a decomposing body, and they now can match that DNA because they will have his. The rest of his life ain't going to be too good.
No, it'll be interesting to see how the case plays out Will he plead? Will he go to trial?
Again, according to news reports, recent news reports, he supposedly has confessed to the murder. But whether that will stand up, who knows? We've sort of, I hope not skimmed over, but talked about the impact on the town. Also, what is in the book, that the interviews you have done with her sister, Anne. And she's very honest about not only losing her sister, but how it affected her life. Her parents never, she felt there was never a normal life after that. The way they interacted with her, I mean, as she become an adult. So we always have these things that are now colored by this tragedy, which I'm sure the parents blame themselves a little bit for, but even not, the trauma that they, the PTSD that they have is visited on the children. And so it's in the book how Anne feels, and the interviews you did with Anne. You need to read those. That's not the mystery. That's something that's important for you to read. But the book is written by Joanna Falcone Sullivan with her partner, Mike Mathis, who both were living through the abduction and kidnapping and murder at the time. And it's an amazing story, not just story itself, but story of the book. The story of the book is fascinating. And so I hope we've touched on that. Is there anything you'd like to say, A, in closing? Or I don't know if you have a Facebook page.
We will be updating the book with the resolution of the case. We never expected, to get here. We thought if they did catch somebody, that person would be gone. But he's very much alive and in jail right now. We do have a website for the book. It's Gretchen Harrington, Innocence Lost in Suburban Philadelphia. It's on Facebook. But you can also find me on LinkedIn and Mike as well.
And I'm guessing you invite comments. You invite people to reach out. You're not being bothered too much by Frontline or 2020 come after you yet?
Oh, no, not yet.
They will. So that, I'm glad I got you before that started happening. So I wanna thank today my guest Joanna Falcone Sullivan. And again, I hope you rush out and get the book, Marple's Gretchen Harrington Tragedy. Kidnapping, Murder, and Innocence Lost in Suburban Philadelphia by Joanna Falcone Sullivan and Mike Mathis. Please convey my regards to Mike. And again, take care.
Thank you so much, Jim. Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
So I'd like to thank you folks for kindly tuning in for another episode of Murder Most Foul. If you liked what you heard, I hope you'll tell your friends. Information about the podcast and an email link that can get a message to me can be found at the podcast's website, the address being www.murdermostfoul, all one word, no caps, no spaces, .com. So, until we meet again, stay safe, and for God's sakes, don't murder anyone.